Good evening. You're listening to Turn on the News from Free 103.9. You can go to newsroom.free103.9.org for more information about anything you hear here. And tonight we'll hear, as always, radio news, radio art, media news, and more. Tonight we are going to look at some radio art from Dichroyax, a new band from Brooklyn. And we're also going to look at some media and radio panels at South by Southwest in Austin, and lots of headlines. Catch you up on the Mike Daisy, This American Life Business, and more on Turn on the News at newsroom.free103.9.org. Listening to Turn on the News. This is Tom Rowe, and I've got radio news, radio art, media news, and more from newsroom.free103.9.org. In the background tonight, Damien Katera, first decompositional duets from the Hogar Gallery performance, and perhaps later, if we get that much news, decomposition, tune in, Thurston Moore, his remix of Thurston Moore from Sonic Youth. That will be behind us in just a second. But first, let's get to the news. Henry Kenyon in Government Computer News reports that radio frequency interference in space is on the rise. Quote, Stuart Sanders, chairman and executive director of the Space Data Association, said March 13th during a panel on orbital radio frequency interference that issues at the Satellite 2012 conference in Washington that there are a number of reasons for this, and most are not related to intentional jamming. Where it used to take highly advanced nations with highly trained personnel to launch and maintain satellites, technological developments have lowered the entry requirements for space, which has increased the number of players in orbit, he said, unquote. Sanders notes there is some intentional jamming, quote, such as recent attempts to jam Eutelsat transmissions, quote, but this only represented about 5% of all detective interference, he said. From a commercial perspective, the vast majority of interference with satellite communications is created by human error, mostly from misaligned antennas and transmitters, unquote. Read the full story in Government Computer News. The link is at newsroom.free103.9.org. John Anderson at DIY Media reports that Cumulus Media, in a yearly filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission, admits that no one cares about high-definition radio. The quote, on March 5th, 2009, we entered into an amendment to our agreement to reduce the number of planned conversions, extend the build-out schedule, and increase the license fees to be paid for each converted station. At this juncture, we cannot predict how successful our implementation of HD radio technology within our platform will be or how that implementation will affect our competitive position. Quote, to my knowledge, this is the first time that a backer of HD radio has been so forthright in a financial document about the tenuous nature of radio's digital transition, unquote, Anderson writes. Cumulus is the second largest broadcast company in the United States. They just bought Citadel Broadcasting. And Anderson does line up some other naysayers, too, for HD radio. Quote, Radio World reported in 2009 that an informal survey of executives in charge of capital expenditures at broadcast conglomerates found many planned to delay their digital conversion campaigns, unquote. Quote, Beasley Broadcast Group Chief Technology Officer Mike Cooney confirmed that his company was backing down on HD convergence in the small markets and putting money more in things that have a quicker return on investment for the capital money, unquote. And in 2009, Crown Broadcast reported that inquiries about HD compatible equipment were virtually non-existent. You can read that full story at DIYmedia.net. John Anderson over there, doing an always great job. Thank you. Clara Leshen-Hoare for Scientific American via CNET reports that the agricultural industry is looking to shoot ultrasound at vegetables to remove pathogens. Quote, when applied to leafy greens, high-power ultrasound creates millions of tiny bubbles along a leaf surface. As they burst at a rate of 1,000 times a second, they provide high-energy shockwaves that can get into the leaf's nooks and crannies to dislodge pathogens, which are then whisked away in the sanitized wash. Earthbound is looking at citrus and parasitic acid-based sanitizers, both sanctioned for use with organic products, unquote. Leshen-Hoare writes, quote, mostly we're after E. coli, 0157H7 norovirus that causes winter vomiting, and we'll continue working with salmonella and listeria as well, says Robert Brackett, director of the Institute for Food Safety and Health, IFSH, at the Illinois Institute of Technology. The wine industry, Leshen-Hoare reports, has used ultrasound to clean oak barrels since 2006. From Wikipedia, ultrasound is a cyclic sound pressure with a frequency greater than the upper limit of human hearing. Ultrasound is thus not separated from normal audible sound based on differences in physical properties, only the fact that humans cannot hear it. Although this limit varies from person to person, it is approximately 20 kilohertz, 200,000 hertz, in healthy young adults. You can read that full story at CNET. John Egerton at Multichannel News reports that on Wednesday, March 21st, Federal Communications Commission Chairman Jules Genachowski and Senior Republican Commissioner Robert McDowell will testify in front of the House Appropriations, Financial Services, and General Government about the FCC's budget. The FCC's current $354.2 million budget is paid for by user fees and fines it collects. It is proposing a $346.8 million budget for 2013. Quote, if the White House has its way, it could collect more money through spectrum fees, which the FCC once proposed might be a way to nudge some broadcasters toward giving up their spectrum for auction. But if the past is a prologue, the spectrum fees will wind up on the cutting room floor after Congress has its say, unquote, Egerton writes. On Wednesday, March 21st, the FCC is also expected to announce a window for nonprofit organizations to apply for low-power FM stations this fall. You can read the full story at Multichannel News. Finally, Andrew Sullivan at The Dish rounds up opinions after the Mike Daisy This American Life incident this weekend. This American Life host Ira Glass announced Friday that Daisy lied to their fact-checkers and that they were retracting the episode of their radio show from January that included Daisy's work. On Saturday, This American Life devoted the entire episode to the incident. Some views around the internet. James Fallows assesses the damage done by Daisy. Daisy's, quote, Daisy's lying will hurt the Western press and international worker rights groups. When they get all huffy, Chinese nationalists love to present the Western press as being irrebubbly biased against Chinese achievements and ambitions and willing to pass along the most outrageous slanders about China without checking them for accuracy or even plausibility. A site called AnyCNN is a well-known outlet for such views. This is a constant nuisance when you try to write critical assessments. Worse, it gives ammo to those inside China who want to poo-poo complaints about safety, pollution, working conditions, and so on. Daisy is everything they warned against come to life. Felix Salmon compares the scandal to another one in the news right now. Quote, one of the reasons why Daisy's show has proved so popular, his This American Life episode was the most downloaded in the show's history, even more than The Squirrel Cop, is that it combined great storytelling with a feeling that this is happening now and we should do something about it. It's exactly the same formula used by Kony 2012, a project which is equally problematic. The fact is that the chief beneficiary of the success of Daisy's monologue has been Mike Daisy, much more than any group of factory workers or underground trades unionists in China. Similarly, the chief beneficiary of the success of Kony 2012 has been Invisible Children, a U.S. nonprofit which spends its money mostly on making movies. Jack, unquote. Jack Schaefer sizes up Fabulous. Quote, I have my theory. One, they lie because they don't have the time or talent to tell the truth. Two, they lie because they think they can get away with it. And three, they lie because they have no respect for the audience they claim to want to enlighten. That would be the ideal subject for a one-man theatrical performance, unquote. You can read that full story at Andrew Sullivan's excellent The Dish. All right, we're going to be back with a little bit about the South by Southwest conference in just a moment on Free 103.9 and Turn on the News. back on Turn on the News, and we want to go now to Austin, Texas, where all weekend the South by Southwest Conference was being held, a annual multimedia conference that brings together all kinds of folks all over the country and the world, and they have a long list of audio files of the different panel discussions, speeches, and events up, and there's links on the newsroom at 3103.9.org. We are going to play a little bit right now, a little clip from the Public Radio is Media's Future panel. Public Radio has, this is the blurb about the panel. Public Radio has leveraged its favorable licensing agreements, its hyperlocal outposts, international muscle to dominate the iTunes chart, develop smart APIs, and build audience all on user-funded platforms. Jake Shapira, the CEO of Cambridge-based Public Radio Exchange, delivered this opening introduction to the panel.
Public radio's audiences are growing. We've had some remarkable digital success. There's some real innovations taking place at the national and the local level. Our content is strong. There's a sort of diverse new content showing up. We're creating podcasts. We're creating new national shows. I think the pipeline of shows has started to unfold a little bit more. We're doing interesting things in culture and in music. Local stations like here at KUT in Austin does some unbelievable stuff with performance. And actually, interestingly, our business models have been somewhat durable. We've talked about this, the fact that, you know, since we didn't have a classifieds, Craigslist, newspaper, single source risk, we've got this weird mix. We've sort of made a virtue out of a necessity, which is a mix of federal funding and state funding and philanthropy and major donors and local underwriting and voluntary giving. And that's sort of been durable. It's actually meant that we haven't had the same sort of push off the cliff yet. But also faces some fundamental challenges, which we're going to talk a little bit about. Threats to federal funding, the politicization, you know, the politics that we've really hit upon, especially in our journalism on the national level, and the disruption and competition that are facing us, as well as dramatically changing consumer habits around access to content. And, you know, while we can look at the kind of continuous growth of public radio audiences from its inception 40 years ago, it's still only reaching 10% of the country. And for a service that aspires to and has almost in its spirit the notion of serving all Americans, that's not very successful if you're reaching 10%. It's a lot better than 0% and 1%, which it started, and 2%, which it became, but still just doesn't feel like we're living up to our own aspirations. But in thinking about some of these sort of qualities of public radio that are succeeding, that are challenged, and then coming to a conference like this, it just seemed like we had an opportunity and wanted to have a discussion about the things that we could distill, the sort of methods to our madness that might actually hold some lessons. And some of them are metaphors and sort of concepts. How, as a media industry, are we doing things that the internet, which is in its still early years of becoming a media enterprise, could learn from? Things that perhaps new media companies and startups who are building the tools or actually creating content might learn from public radio, or perhaps want to partner with us to do or help us actually create those things that could grow beyond the 10% reach that we have. And I worry a little bit about, you know, the current state of just assumptions that the platforms we now see as the public square, Google and Facebook and Twitter in particular, where we think now that's where discussion and civil interaction happens, those are pretty tenuous. There was a reason 45 years ago in an era of media scarcity that there was a set aside and an actual conscious effort to create non-commercial space. That ain't going to happen again on the internet. And so I think it's up to public radio and public media to figure out how to actually inform, influence, and grow into that in a more dramatic way. So partly this is a call to us at a conference like this to step up and not suffer from this kind of underdog complex that I talked a little bit about yesterday, where I feel like we've got this conundrum of a superiority complex combined with the inferiority complex. Superiority complex being that our mission is transcendent and it's essential to the functioning of democracy itself, and then inferiority complex being that we're the perpetual media underdog and we're kind of scrappy and we're kind of just always playing second fiddle. And it's painful often at the digital conferences because we look like we're just catching up to the last wave of tools that everybody else already figured out 5 years ago, and we should be actually inventing the next ones and propelling ourselves forward. So this is also just clearly my own fixation because I love public radio. I love the internet. I've always felt they could learn a lot from each other and aren't as much as they could.
All right, now behind us is Dichroix, new band. Here's a theremin going off there. It's a little radio art. And then Dichroix is a Brooklyn-based band that includes former Dust Dive frontman Brian Zimmerman and his radio samples and Darren Mickey on theremin. A dichroic filter, a thin film filter, or interference filter, is a very accurate color filter used to selectively pass light of a small range of colors while reflecting other colors. Used before a light source, a dichroic filter produces light that is perceived by humans to be highly saturated, intense in color. So this is iPod Suicide from Dichroix. Now we're going to hear Corporate Woods Perfume, which starts with some phone samples, and then Freebase the Febreze on Turn on the News.
Corporate Woods, Rock and Club. outside north to northeast with 20 to 30 knots. Seas 8 to 12 feet. South, outside northeast to east with 6 to 20 knots. Seas 4 to 7 feet. Middle Gulf between 85 west and 90 west 9:30 a.m. Central Standard Time. Friday, February 12, 2010. Gale warning north of 24 north this afternoon. North of 24 north, west of front west, to northwest wind 25 to 35 knots. 7 to 10 feet. North of 24 north.
Thank you.
Critics on Free 103.9's Turn on the News, nightly look at radio art, radio news, media news, and more. It's from their new record, Dichroics, just out. Free Bass to Free Breeze, before that, Corporate Woods Perfume and iPod Suicide. We're just going to wrap up things on Turn on the News today. On this day in 1922, WIP AM in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, went on the air. In 1935, the radio show Your Hit Parade premiered. Excuse me, Your Hit Parade. In 1958, on this day, communist clandestine Barassi Bism Radio began operating. And also in 58, communist Greek clandestine radio began operating. In 1980, the ship Mi Amigo, where England's pirate radio station Radio Caroline was housed offshore, sank. And that'll sink us tonight. Thank you for tuning in to Turn on the News. Tune in every night at midnight on Free 103.9. Go to free103.9.newsroom.org for more information about anything you hear here. And tune in, turn out, and turn on the news.